This is the Paper Planes podcast, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
The thing is, when you're doing journey mapping and understanding your personas, what wows them may not be as expensive or effortful as one would think.
So people are becoming less loyal because they know if they churn, they'll get a better offer.
We go, what's the benefit to the organisation? What's the benefit to the employee? And what's the benefit to the customer?
Welcome to episode number 71 of the Paper Planes podcast. And if this is your first time listening to the show, then where have you been for the other 70 episodes? But if you are back for more, then good on you. And we really appreciate that. Today, we have a lady on the show by the name of Isabella Villani. She is, at the moment, the company director and chief customer officer of an organization that she founded a while back called Exceed Global. And Exceed Global is an iconic Australian customer experience advisory and solutions firm. So if you don't know what customer experience means, Isabella will explain that at the start of the conversation. But perhaps more importantly, the reason we got Isabella on the show was because I bought a book by her about 4 weeks ago that I found on the shelves at Dimmocks, and I was looking for something for our own internal reference. It is called Transform Customer Experience, or How to Achieve Customer Success and Create Exceptional CX by Isabella Villani. It is published by an organization called Wiley, that is W-I-L-E-Y. I'm probably sure it's available on Amazon if you want to buy it on Amazon. But yeah, look, I bought this. I was very, very impressed by it. I obviously read a lot of books. It has a great step-by-step guide for anybody wanting to increase their customer experience or improve their customer experience, probably the right word. And it's applicable to anybody or any business from small to large. There is lessons to be learnt from small businesses, for small businesses, and for those bigger national and multinational companies. So if you get a chance, go out and buy it. I think it's well worth your time and effort. And Isabella is going to talk through some of the key things that with it. We touch on 6 or 7 bits from out of the book. I probably turned over 25 corners of pages to go back to. It is a sensational read. Now, before we jump into the interview with Isabella, we should do the usual routine and announcements at the start. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We just need more 5-star reviews, please. If you're looking to record your own podcast, you're looking for any audio work, go and talk to the podcast boss. That is Gilberto, our Colombian friend, who edits our audio of all of our podcasts and sells us guns and drugs. If you're looking to talk to somebody for some help in digital marketing, you could probably do worse than talking to myself or Matt. Then you can find us at www.flypaperplanes.co. And finally, come and add me on LinkedIn. Episode 69, I did a little 10-minute snapshot about some tips about how to use LinkedIn properly. And look, I'd like to connect there. So please come and add me on LinkedIn. Tell me where you're from. Tell me that you listen to the podcast, because that always helps. It would be great to connect. Anyway, so we will jump now straight in to the interview with Isabella Villani from Exceed Global. Welcome to the show, Isabella Villani, who is the boss. You're no longer the CEO of Exceed Global, are you? But you're still on the board and all those kind of things. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me along, Simon. I'm really happy to be here.
So just for everybody's benefit, and we'll talk about your book in a minute, but can you give us a bit of an overview about who Exceed Global are and what you do there?
Yeah, sure. Exceed Global was a company I started back in 2011. We focus on customer experience, consulting, training, research, and we also do recruitment in this space as well. So we work with large organizations to smaller organizations, and we help organizations improve customer experience all the way from their customer experience strategy to actually the execution and helping them really transform their business.
And for the dumb people out there, of which there, I'm sure there will be some. Explain what you mean by customer experience, because obviously both those words sound fairly descriptive, but what's your perception of customer experience?
Yeah, customer experience is an interaction that a person would have with an organization. So it could be in any channel or any medium. So a customer experience is their perception of what it is like to interact with your business, what they think, what they feel, and how they go about doing that.
And that could be anything from the way that people answer the phone to, you know, their experience on the website to walking into a store. It's pretty much everything, isn't it?
Exactly. So when we look at customer experience, we think of that omni-channel customer experience, which is a seamless and consistent customer experience across all of those customer channels and touch points. Because from a customer's perspective, they don't see you in silos. Like, this is our retail network and this is our contact center and this is our digital team. They sort of integrate that whole experience into one. So that's what we really focus on, educating our customers about that and what their customers are thinking and walking in their shoes, and then looking at how we actually make it easy for customers to do business.
Now, the story as to how you're on this show, I'm just going to impart to everybody out there, because about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I was actually looking for a book on customer experience, on the customer journey and those kind of things. And I was looking for it actually for ourselves, for myself and my business partner, and how we expand our business, but make sure that we maintain a level of customer experience through that expansion. And I was sat in Dimmocks, or I was stood in Dimmocks, and I was looking at the management.
Yeah.
I was looking at the bookshelf there, and they had these lovely green and white. In fact, there was lots of them there. So whoever your publisher is, they managed to do a good deal with Dimmocks, because you had a lot of visibility there on the shelf. And I bought your book and I read it sort of within the first week. And I have, as I do, turned over lots of corners of pages. So I guess my first question for you would be, what on earth made you want to write a book?
Maybe I'm a bit crazy, because ask anyone who's written a book. I'm assuming you said green and white. So my second book, Transform Customer Experience.
Yes.
After the first one, I said, never again. I'm not going through all of this again. And then I just want to really make a difference. And I have stories to tell. And customer experience really isn't a university degree that people can, you know, get a bachelor of customer experience and go out there. And the best way people learn is by telling stories. So I really, really wanted to tell my stories. So with Transform Customer Experience, I was very lucky. My publishing company is Wiley, and they picked me up as a CX author, and I've been very, very lucky. It's in Dimmocks, it's in all the big bookshops, in a physical presence, which is really hard to get today, as well as all the online channels and, you know, ebook, talking book, hard copy. You can get it in any way, shape or form, which is really exciting for me. And even you contacting me and saying that you saw my book in Dimmocks, I still get tingles down my spine when I walk into Dimmocks and check to see if the book still stocked in there. But I just really wanted to make a difference in customer experience. And in this book, I'd spoken to other CX professionals around the world, and they were happy to contribute their stories as well, the good, the bad, the ugly. And I think that you go to a lot of conferences and presentations, which is where most people learn about CX. They often tell you the happy part, like the happy story. And I think it's really important to understand that no one does CX perfectly well. Everyone's transforming and on an evolutionary process. And the best way to learn is from your own mistakes, but it's even better for you if you learn from other people's mistakes or learning. And the point of the book as well, Simon, was to be a hands-on book. So a book that has, here's how you do a customer journey map. When you're looking at reporting around customer experience and are you really making a difference, you need to think about lead and lag indicating data, and here's some examples of that. So I really, really wanted to have a book out there that people could use as a how-to guide, and one that was really, really easy to read. So my background is speech pathology, and I understand about comprehension. So you don't have to be a CEO of a large organization, you know, with a master's degree to be able to understand and apply the principles in the book. And that was really important to me, that the local cafe owner, all the way through to a large corporate, could pick up the book and get something out of it.
And I've already got a lot out of it ourselves for our business, but I actually used some of the modeling that you did with customer journeying on Monday with a client of ours. And we often actually do customer journey for in a digital space with clients. And some of the things that you'd put in there actually really helped us drill down a bit more on certain touch points that were important to the customers of our clients. So I've got a lot out of it and obviously thoroughly recommend it. I guess before we actually dive into it, because there's obviously some things I want, some really cool lessons out of it that I think people would appreciate. Do you stand in Dimmocks and point the book out to people? That's because I know if I had a hard copy, I would do that.
If you check out my Instagram or Facebook pages, I'm still in awe. Like, I still find it surreal that my book's there in all of these bookshops, particularly I travel a lot and they're in the airports as well. And so when I go there, I timidly go up to the counter and say, hey, this is my book. Would you like me to sign some copies for you because I'm in the area? And, you know, they take photos of me. I've written in author books and they put these stickers on it. So I do feel a little bit like a celebrity, but I'm the same person I was before the book got published. So it is an amazing thing. And hearing your story around customer journey mapping now, you mentioned a key thing and I put that in the book. The end product, the deliverable, the map is excellent and that's fantastic. But it's equally as important the process that people go through to develop the journey map. If you really want to take your people, your staff, your clients on a CX journey, you really need them to start walking in the shoes of their customers and start feeling those pains and stop thinking about all the processes and the silos and the departments and the business rules and the regulatory obligations behind it all and actually go from a customer's perspective, what do they see? So I'm glad to hear you got a lot out of the workshop because I think that's equally as important and you should never discount the importance of creating the map as the map itself.
I wanted to talk about the first thing that I actually underlined when I opened your book, which is actually on page number one, chapter number one, was the story about Reed Hastings and about why he founded Blockbuster. And perhaps if you can tell us that story. And I think, do you still see a lot of that kind of activity where businesses are fining their customers for things that they shouldn't be fining them for?
Yeah, I think that we sort of get an idea of what our customers want, but we don't necessarily know unless we ask them and we do a lot of research. And customer experience is evolving so rapidly, you never really quite know what it is that, you know, you're doing or what they're going to embark on. So, for example, with customers, they're unique beings and they are very clear about what they're wanting, what they hope to get out of a customer experience or, what you know, their product or service. But you can do as much market research as you like, but they don't even know what they want to ask. You can turn around and say, I'll give you blah, blah, is that something you'd like? And then they'd go, yeah, that's exactly something that I want. But in actual fact, it's not to you, I suppose, not to they actually think about it all. You give them something and go, hey, that's even better than I wanted. I didn't even know that that was possible. So a lot of organisations evolve and those organisations that are doing well, and you mentioned, you know, my case study about Reed Hastings and Blockbuster, is that was amazing. He didn't have that great experience about Blockbuster and he went, I can do better than this. I'm going to look at doing something else. He got so annoyed by that late fee that he started Netflix. So, you know, if you think about that, the Foxtels of the world and all of those organizations like the Blockbusters, you would never ever think they'd go away. It was like Kodak never thought that there'd be no more film and we'd move into digitalization. So a lot of organizations, Yellow Pages is another example of that, where someone really moved their cheese and they've had to work out what is our offering and how do we change with the times. So I think customer experience is moving so rapidly. You have to stay connected with your customers and stay up to date with what they want, because otherwise they'll go somewhere else and get what they need elsewhere.
One of my one of the quotes I underlined in that first chapter as well was I will read it, but it says, when customers are dealing with an organization, they're not only comparing it with its direct competitors, they're comparing it to every other interaction they've had with any other organization they've dealt with. And I think that's a massively important point there, that your customers aren't comparing you just with your competitors. They have been to an Apple store and they know what the customer service of an Apple store is like. And now they're expecting everybody else to be like that.
Very, very true. And, you know, if they're paying a bill, you know, they're going to compare paying a bill to someone else. Or if they can access account information online with a similar sort of product or service, they're expecting, you know, they expect that. And the irony of it all is, like, for example, let's just give an example of a utility. They may compare each other against another utility, but in actual fact, unless that customer's churned, they actually don't know what that utility, that other experience is going to be like with the utility. So in actual fact, they're more likely to compare their product, the product or service or what they're getting with something that's similar out there with a complete transaction or service or product that may be similar but not exactly the same. So I think a lot of organizations get complacent because they think, oh, yeah, this organization is compared against our competitor. And the other thing that organizations do on that topic, Simon, is they consider the competitor at that moment in time, and they don't realize that transformation is a journey. If you're going to launch a new digital app, it's going to take a week, a month, a year. So actually when they're comparing themselves about their competitors in that moment in life, they don't know what they've got up their sleeve and what's to come.
There's another great point that you made early on, which talks about the reason for retaining customers and the reason for working so hard to retain customers is that retaining customers is immensely more profitable than trying to find new customers, which I think everybody understands. Well, maybe people don't understand, but the figures that you use there to say that, you know, retaining 5% of your customers could lift your profit between 25% and 95%. That's a huge number.
Yeah, we seem to be doing a lot of work of enticing new customers and, you know, offers for new customers. And I think we get really complacent with our customers that have been loyal and haven't, you know, churned and have paid on time every month for the past 5 or 6 years. And they're great customers to have. That's how you built your business. So acquiring new customers and offering a special offer to someone who joins if they're a new customer, can you imagine how you feel if you're an existing loyal customer and you're not offered that same price or that same deal? So I think that, you know, that's actually happening a lot more now. So people are becoming less loyal because they know if they churn, they'll get a better offer. Like, I don't know if you've done it, but I've called up my insurance company and every single time I get a new renewal letter in the mail, I always make time to make that 5-minute phone call to say I'm looking at leaving, and their retention teams do a great job in retaining me. However, they end up offering me a significant discount if I stay, and I get quite annoyed because I think, why do you have to call you to get that discount?
Yeah.
Why can't you just offer me that for my loyalty? It's almost like they're cheeky and they want to try to get away with it if they can, and they're lucky because I'll give them a chance to say, hey, I want to stay with you. But I'm almost tempted that next year when the renewal letter comes is to look around and shop around and actually leave.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess you mentioned a company earlier on, Foxtel. I mean, Foxtel have been very guilty of that for a long time. And I think, you know, again, with the arrival of the Netflixes and the Stans of this world, they're under a lot more pressure. And I did exactly that 2 months ago and rang them up and got a better price. But I sat there and went, why has it had to resort to me calling you to get that better price?
Yeah, people are asking. So we as customers are becoming far more savvy, more educated now. We know a lot more what's going on because they're far more social and we hear what's going on and we're demanding a better customer experience. So a lot of organisations really need to step up to the plate or they will lose these customers. So ironically, I've never had a Foxtel account, but I have a Stan and a Netflix account because I like the flexibility that they offer. And, you know, they're easy to use and, you know, I can flick around, particularly when I'm traveling. I've got access to it everywhere. I know Foxtel have got Foxtel Go, but I've actually never looked at Foxtel because I've gone with Netflix and Stan. And being a CX expert, I bank with every bank. I churn frequently from different, you know, services because I actually want to know what it's like to have a customer experience with different companies. Because I think if I'm going to talk about it, I at least need to have more, as much practical experience as I can. So I love shopping online. I love shopping face to face. I'm such a consumer because I really look at customer experience and the services that are provided.
I only have Foxtel because my wife.
But I'm probably your worst customer.
No, no. Well, I only have Foxtel because my wife insists on watching some very strange reality shows and things like that. So otherwise, I probably wouldn't have it as well.
But. Oh, okay.
In that area, one of the other things that I thought was really interesting, you talk about a car service company, the example that you used, where a fourth year customer was worth almost four times as much to the business as a first year customer. And this is one of those things I try and drum into in our clients to say, even if your acquisition of a customer is actually, you know, profit negative or even potentially making a loss on the acquisition, if you keep customers for a long time, they become very profitable later on.
They do. They become profitable later on because they'll give you repeat business. And generally speaking, if they hang around with you, they're also going to become great referrers for you. So not only are they profitable, they then become, you know, that great referral network. And generally speaking, if you're with a company for a long time, you usually, and this sounds bizarre to say this, but you're usually low maintenance.
Yeah.
Like if you think about when you've left an organization, Simon, you've probably left because you're not happy because something's triggered you to leave and you've probably called a lot and complained a lot or done whatever you can if you're passionate about staying with that company. So I always call like a set of customers that set and forget. They pay their bill on time every time. They're very loyal. They don't shop around and, you know, and marketers will hate to hear this and this is a really big conundrum for a marketer. Sometimes you're better to set and forget and leave them alone because if you remind them that you exist,
yeah,
they may start going, oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're trying to tell me how good you are you that good? I might actually look around now.
Yeah.
So do you really want to, you know, like I did some work for a charity, for example, and they wanted to do a thank you campaign for regular givers. I said, oh, I don't know if you're going to like that because you're going to remind them you exist, particularly it's around tax time and they're starting to pinch pennies and they may donate more, but they may not. And in actual fact, they had that thing where people are going, I don't actually want this thank you call. How much did it cost you to pay someone to make this thank you call? I'd rather you have given that money to support the charity that I'm paying you to support, you know, and to do your great work.
Mm.
So it was really interesting. This charity had a lot of churn and also had disgruntled regular givers who have gone, stop wasting money calling me to say thank you. I don't need a thank you. I like to know that you're helping, you know, and doing and making a difference on my behalf.
There was an exercise that I saw in the book about segmenting customers by value.
Yeah.
And it's something that I sat there and went, you know what, we need to do that. And it's the classic 80-20 rule that 80% of the volume, 80% of your profit comes from 20% of your customers. But can you just talk about the groups within that, that people, that when you talk about them, people might actually kind of identify their own customers in those groups?
Yeah, sure. Look, you can segment customers in a variety of ways. And the example you gave there around high net worth customers is if you have got customers that are extremely valuable to your business and fit into that, you know, 80-20 rule, you really want to show them extra love, attention, consideration. So my whole point on in the chapter around segmentation is a one-size-fits-all for customer experience isn't necessarily the answer. You know, if you're having customers that aren't providing you as much value or profit, do you want to spend as much or equal as much as time as those other customers who are looking after you and supporting your business and growing with you and are loyal to you and all of those other factors? So just my little caveat here is I don't think you should segment customers by customer value only, because there could be potential value or there could be other reasons why you choose to treat customers different. But my biggest point around that section of the book is around providing a personalized customer experience. So actually thinking about that customer type and how can you deliver a great customer experience for them.
And one of the things you talk about there is creating customer personas, which again is for us is when we start that, when we start a strategy session with a client, is normally our first, one of our first steps at least. Explain to people out there what a customer persona is and why it's important that people need to know what they are.
Yeah, sure. A customer persona is a customer segment that you pretty much personify and bring to life. So for example, if you're a utility, you might have a range of customers, so residential, small business, and within residential you might have customers that are an older demographic, a couple with young children, you know, a couple due to retire, a single person. So you think about all of these different customer personas and what are those attributes and traits about them. You bring them into being. You create them as a human. So what's their name? How old are they? Where do they live? What do they like about your organization? What do they need from your organization? How do they like to interact with you? What services do you think or products that they're going to be using that are relevant to them? So it actually brings that customer to life, even with a name and a photo. And ironically, when we do persona development, the biggest debate, to be honest, Simon, isn't much about the personality, it's always the photo or the name. But we think about if, for example, you know, it's an older demographic, is she Betty or Marg? And what does she look like? So then we start, when we then apply the personas, we can do customer journey mapping and apply the personas, or we can actually do things and go in a meeting, how would Betty respond to this product we're about to launch? Like, how would Betty feel if we force everyone to online and we don't let people ring up the phone anymore? Well, Betty's of the world, they're probably going to want to pick up the phone. They may be digitally savvy. And if we are encouraging the Betty's of the world to go online or to move to a digital presence, then how can we make it as easy as possible for them? So we start talking about any change, anything we're doing within the organization, how would our different personas feel about what we're doing and how can we make a difference? And even walking in the shoes of the customer, if you're going to change a process, for example, yeah, sure, you can rewrite the process to optimize it, but considering the process and the impact of that process change on all the different personas just makes you really start walking into the shoes of a customer. And, you know, saying better Betty rather than older customer age, blah, 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 this segment lives here, lives there, and you actually create as a segment. If you consider it about Betty and you make it a person, we as humans naturally relate more to people. So they're more likely to think about that particular persona type rather than just referring to Betty as a segment or a number.
There's an excellent, and actually ironically it's not in your book, but it was in another customer persona framework that I use, and it talks about building all the things that exactly the same way that you've done with the customer persona. So understanding their name, their demographics, all those kind of bits and pieces. But one of the greatest questions I find in asking personas, asking these imaginary people questions, is how would their life be better with your product?
Yes.
And that's really holding a mirror up to yourself and going, oh, if you can't answer that, then you're in trouble. Or if you can't answer that well, you're in trouble.
Yeah. And the other thing we do when we do very similar, our approach for our personas is that, but the other thing we'll do is what will wow your customer?
Yeah.
And that's really, really interesting, Simon, because when we ask, because we'll do focus groups as well as part of the persona design in some instances. But it's really interesting because when we ask staff and we develop personas with them, we go, what would wow them? And some of the things would wow them, I stand there in the workshop and go, nah, they just expect that. What would really wow them? Oh, that the internet's fast. No, 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 they would pretty much expect internet because that's what they're paying for.
Yeah.
What would wow them? You know, that they could do this online. Yeah, and most organisations allow you to do that online. It really, really makes internal staff members really understand, hang on a minute, we know it's near impossible to do this because of integration between these back-end systems. So therefore, it might well them as an employee that they can offer that. But in actual fact, if they walk in the shoes of the customer, it isn't wowing them. It's just so you should, everyone else is, or that's what I'm paying for. So using personas are really, really powerful ways of doing that to, you know, have that customer hat at the table. So for example, in a meeting, someone in the room is allocated to be the customer. So they wear a customer hat and their own hat. So they'll go, hang on, if I was this particular customer, oh, this persona, if I was Betty, I wouldn't really like that because I think, you know, this would be it. So it's just bringing the customer into the room if you can't physically bring that customer into the room.
I love that. I love the idea of doing the role play. I think that's, you know, that's a great opportunity. And I think that would be quite a shocking, you know, revelation to a lot of people to sort of say, yeah, you know, if I can't sell to an imaginary customer who's standing in front of me, then, you know, it's going to be hard for me to, you know, present my business case and my brand to other people out there.
And also I'd question if we're not going to make, if initiative, product, whatever, isn't going to make a big difference to a customer, if it's not going to improve EX or CX, then we need to question, employee experience and customer experience. We need to really question, you know, why are we doing it? So when we do transformational projects, we actually, when we, you know, look at initiatives, we go, what's the benefit to the organization? What's the benefit to the employee? And what's the benefit to the customer? We actually look at those three, you know, elements in our work we're doing. And I'm generalizing here because I'm just sort of giving you an example, but you can't have a great employee experience without a great customer experience. And a lot of the times our customers are internal.
Yeah.
So it helps us think about that as well.
It reminds me of the story. I mean, that sort of thing where you say, you know, customers want fast internet and you sort of say, well, that's what actually customers expect. That's something that they're paying for. It reminds me of the Airbnb story where they kind of went, well, what's a 5-star Airbnb experience? And they analyzed it and they said, well, you know, everyone should be getting a 5-star Airbnb experience. Anyway, that's why we're in business. And they scale it up and they sat there and said, well, what would be a 6-star? What would be a 7-star? What would be an 8-star? And I think I'm paraphrasing the story because I read it a while back, was that they have this concept of what an 11-star experience is at an Airbnb. And I think it was something like, you know, staying in the International Space Station and having the Beatles play live for you, which obviously, you know, is never going to happen. But at least what they then understand is where there are elements that they can potentially pull out of the 11-star experience and bring down to the 5-star experience.
Exactly. So when we talk about what wows our customers, it is, let's see what wows them. And is it achievable? Because we could possibly do it. It may not be, you know, the thing is when you're doing journey mapping and understanding personas, what wows them may not be as expensive or effortful as one would think. So I think that you've got to, you know, look at that when you're looking at a customer experience. And often, honestly, Simon, because of where we are with customer experience, particularly in Australia, it's actually just getting the basics right. Yeah. So for example, with Airbnb, it has been able to contact someone. It has been able to open the door when that you arrive and know that, you know, there's a key or if there's fresh bread, you know, bed linen provided, it's there. We've actually sometimes forgotten the basics because we've gone to the extreme to go, you know, like if someone calls you, they just want someone to answer the phone and that person take ownership, accountability and be able to help them with their inquiry. It's actually not, and you think that's really simple, but we're making our organization so complex and we're putting all this technology like speech recognition at the front and we're actually, you know, hang on a second, I'll transfer you to someone else. So we're actually making it more complex, you know, for our customers to do business with us rather than ease. And I say in the book, and I'm a big fan of customer ease or effort if you're going to measure customer experience. You know, the easier it is for you to make customers do business with you, the more likely you're going to attract and retain them. So in my mind, I always talk to my customers, how can we make it easier for our customers? How do we allow them to interact in the channel of their choice when they want to? If we got to make it easy, why do we make them jump through hoops? So it's that sort of questioning that you know, really transforms an organization if they're constantly questioning themselves on how they do things better.
It's great that you come up with these ideas, and it's great that we, you know, customers and, you know, businesses try and implement them. But if you're a small business out there, so you're not a multinational or, you know, or even national company, you might just be a, you know, a small mum and dad business. How would you suggest people go about measuring the success of any kind of customer experience, you know, implementation or plan?
Yeah, you can't improve really what you can't measure. So the first thing around it is an awareness, and it is actually understanding your business from your customer's perspective and work out what makes a difference to them and how can you measure it. So, for example, is it how fast they get served over a counter? Is it price? What is it that really, really encourages a customer to continue doing business with you? And look at those metrics and think, can we measure it today? And if we can't, can we measure it tomorrow? But what does success look like for us? And it's just a brainstorming exercise, because a lot of the CX measures, and you can have a voice of the customer program and survey your customers or put iPads, you know, in your shop with happy, neutral, sad faces. But there are a lot of metrics that you can have in an organization that you would know would be a pretty good lever for customer experience. And that might be, you know, if someone's ordered something from you and, you know, you've told them it's going to be here on Monday, is Monday actually acceptable for them, or were they expecting it last Thursday? And did you give it to them on Monday? And did you communicate proactively that it had arrived? So it's what are the factors, what are the drivers of customer experience for your business, and then how can you measure them?
How do you measure your business? I'm not putting you on the spot here, but, you know, you've obviously been doing what you've been doing for a long time, you know, and you're a service-based business. How do you measure that success for yourselves?
We look at repeat business. We look at feedback. Feedback is always a gift, and we're always asking our customers for feedback. So we will ask for feedback during a project. Is there anything else we could do? We share a lot of stories. We develop a lot of case studies to sort of really understand where we're going. We don't bid for a lot of work in tenders, but if we, often with government, that's the only way you can do business with them. If we're unsuccessful in a tender, I ask why. And often we don't ask why we were successful. So if we win a piece of work, I want to know, you know, what was it that made you choose us instead of someone else? A lot of our work is uncompeted, which I'm very, very lucky to be able to say that. But, you know, it's constantly asking questions and it's sharing things. But we have some internal metrics that I suppose we don't have on a wall board or anything like that, like on a call center. But if customers contact us, we contact them back pretty much straight away. We're quite responsive on email. So yeah, we intrinsically know what the drivers of customer experience are. So we're doing it all the time. But the most thing that I would say everyone does is we just listen to our customers, and we really are proactive, and we probably go above and beyond of helping them. So for example, if we're on a client site and there's another issue going on, which is an example of a client that we're working with now, we're doing their CX strategy, their mission, their vision, their values, their commitment. We've run focus groups, we've done personas, journey maps. We're helping them with some specific projects, but they've come to me with an extra project that isn't, you know, within our scope, just to bounce ideas by us. So we're really seen as thought leaders. So in my mind, it doesn't always mean if you ask me a question, you're going to get an invoice from me, because I'm very grateful that they have given us business. And if I can help and share knowledge, I'm happy to do that. So it's about give and take as well. Like that particular customer was a reference for us on a tender that we were successful on. So I thought, wow, if she can take the time to do a reference check for us. She rang me at short notice. They always ring me on the way home from work at night. I got a phone call on the way home. The very next day, I was on the phone with her at 7:30 in the morning while she was driving back into work again. So you think about that's important to a customer, that you're there when you need them.
Out of all the people that you've worked with, and actually all the people that you haven't worked with, who do you think in Australia is doing customer experience the best?
People always ask me this question, and I'm so critical. I really struggle with it all. In Australia, let me think. I would say to you, often the smaller businesses are doing it the best. And the irony of it is they're doing really well at it and they don't have the technology and the bells and whistles of the larger organisations. So for me, they're doing it well because they usually hire people who are caring, considerate and provide that great customer experience. I hate to say this to you. As I said, we shop with multiple people. All the carriers out there at the moment, I don't have anything positive to say. I can't even get my, I was given a dodgy letter to push me onto, to get off broadband and to onto NBN, and this thing never works. I'm surprised it hasn't cut out while I'm talking to you. So I wouldn't say the carriers. I can see some changes in things. So Qantas are trying at the moment.
Yeah.
Again, they're sending me emails to say that we're doing things, but Qantas need to get the basics right, and that is get the plane to go on time and give me my luggage.
Mm.
So the last time I flew with Qantas, my flight was cancelled twice.
Right.
And I was put on a third flight that was delayed, no explanation why, all done by text, and the text told me not to call them.
Yeah.
Like, what? So I would say that, but then if you get on a plane, I find the crew lovely, so I feel that holistically they need to look at, basically getting the basics right. That would be a lot. Like Maya's struggling now and they're doing a lot to change their customer experience, and I think they're listening to their customers a lot more. But what I'm finding is a lot of the utilities, the water companies, and even government organisations are really thinking about how they do business better. And a perfect example of that is the ATO. And if you read the case studies and the comments from Jane King, who contributed from the ATO in my book, they are really trying to make a difference in customer experience. They acknowledge that no one wants to talk to them. No. No one wants to pay taxes. No. No one wants to hand over their money. So they're trying to make it as easy as possible for customers to do business with them, recognising that we don't like them.
Yeah.
So they've got a bit of a challenge on their hands as well.
It's funny you mentioned Maya there, and in your book there's a case study from Kmart Australia as well.
Yeah.
I'm always super, super critical of Maya because for two main reasons, and I've shopped there. I bought luggage there last month, a couple of months ago. But I generally avoid the place like the plague. And I think for two reasons is number one, I don't think Maya have adjusted their product offering within the store to 2019. I think they're still selling things that were popular in 2010 they just haven't, somewhere they're buying is not quite worked out that people have moved on. And I think the second thing from Maya's point of view is the experience doesn't adjust to the different types of buyer. So as you would probably know, men and women buy in very different ways.
Mm.
And then men and women buy things for children in very different ways. Maya doesn't seem to, none of the big stores seem to understand that or want to understand or want to do anything about that. And it's still this homogenous kind of experience that everyone is supposed to get accustomed to.
Yeah, I hear you. I agree with you about Maya. The other thing that Maya has is a bit of a challenge for them to deal with is they're actually almost like a mini department store. So they lease out their floor to like Nike or Mecca or Sunglass Hut. So it's very hard to have a consistent customer experience in Maya if you can't control all the staff. And the other example is I bought a pair of sunglasses online at Maya over Christmas. They came from overseas in shipping. Nothing was branded in Maya. Even the text to say that my item had been shipped. So I thought that it was spam text messages. So I was hesitant to click any hyperlinks. The product came. The product was faulty. Went into Maya, went to the counter to change. No, you need to go downstairs and queue up in the return section and then come back to us. Go downstairs, do it. My refund hadn't come through till like 5 hours later, and I was expected to put more money on my credit card to purchase the gift, the sunglasses again. Like, come on, Maya, if you really want to have and come across as one store, you've made it apparently clear that Sunglass Hut is separate to you, and you made me queue multiple times, and the irony of it was there was a pair in stock. So they could have just processed a straight exchange, but because of their business model, I had to return the product to go, because I'd bought it online, to go upstairs and buy it again.
Yeah.
Like one customer. So I don't care that your sunglass cut. I don't care that I bought it on your online channel and I'm in your face-to-face channel. It was just a terrible experience. So I just think they've got to get that right.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I would probably argue it's too much for them. And it will always be too much for them, to the point where they will eventually collapse under their inability to deliver that level of customer service that we come to expect, and will be replaced by somebody who can do it. I honestly can't see Maya and probably David Jones ever adjusting in the way that you and I would both expect them to. Which is sad, but that's just what I think.
Yeah, look, they've got a new CEO at Mice. He's not so new now, but let's see what he can do. Ian Bailey contributed to my book, and I think the work he's done at Kmart's pretty extraordinary, because he really shifted Kmart. He's been promoted since, and he's still within the Wesfarmers group. But if you think about the transformation that's happened at Kmart, that's pretty, pretty big for a retail chain. So I take my hat off to Ian Bailey and his team for the work they've done. Mm. Because as you mentioned, Maya and David Jones may struggle. You know, you look at Bunnings over here doing really well. Bunnings failing in the UK. Masters coming here and Masters disappearing with their tail between their legs, sort of thing. So it's a tough gig.
Mm. Mm. Look, the last question I've got for you today is. Your chapter towards the end, we talk about the future of customer experience, and you mention a lot of things that might come in and impact and change that customer experience part of everybody's business. What one of those do you think is going to be the most impactful in the next sort of 5 to 10 years?
I would say the unknown, and that is we have all of these new things coming into play that are impacting customer experience, new technologies and things that are popping out there that we're not even aware of. And Australians and humans in general, we're becoming really fast adopters of new stuff. So I think the biggest challenge will be all these new things that are coming into play, and how do you integrate it into your business? Even with technology, how big is your technology team going to become to be agile, to keep up with supporting and maintaining all these new technologies that are coming in and having a play with customer experience? So I think that that's a big challenge. And the other thing around customer experience, which is a challenge for organizations, is changes to their operating model. And that is that, the way that they operate or do business today may not be how they can operate best tomorrow. And they may even need a different skill set because of the changes that are coming into play. And we're seeing that already with digitalization and customers self-serving or customers getting a lot smarter with their technology and eliminating a lot of the white noise of why customers were calling in the past. So when customers are calling now, they're tending to be more complex inquiries. Mm. So I don't know if that answered your question, but I think all of those things together are going to have a big impact. And I think a lot of organizations, if they're not agile, they're going to be left behind. There's no room to be sluggish, to take your time. You're going to have to be bold, be daring, and think about what we're doing to customer experience and keeping up without resting on your laurels.
Look, thank you very much for your time today. The last question I'm going to ask you is, if somebody wants to get hold of you, if they want to ask you a question, and they even want to hire you guys to help them out with their customer experience, what's the best way of getting in contact with you?
They can email me or find me via LinkedIn. I've got a website, Isabella Villani Author, that has all of my contact details, and you can contact me via my website as well. I'm on social media if you want to follow me. I'm out there.
Okay. And what I would say is I'll just again, from my perspective, if you get the chance, if you're in Dimmocks or you're on Amazon or wherever, the book is called Transform Customer Experience. Buy it because you won't regret it. It's it's an excellent read, and it's one of those ones where I've turned over probably at least 20 corners to go back to. If you're in marketing, it's definitely something you should read. If you're not in marketing and you're running a business, it's definitely something you should read. But thank you very, very much for your time today. Very much appreciate it. And thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. And thank you so much for inviting me, Simon. I'm delighted to hear you really enjoyed my book. So thanks for the feedback.
And the last thing is, if anybody sees Isabella in Dimmocks, you know, and she's hanging about her own book, don't say anything to her, because it might be a bit weird, mightn't it? But she'll sign a book for you whilst you're
there. Might be. Yeah, I just stalk around. Yeah. If you see me in Collins or Dimmocks, yeah, just ignore me.
Thanks very much.
All right, beautiful. Thanks, Simon.
That's pretty much it for episode number 71 of the Paper Planes podcast. We appreciate you tuning in. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again next week.